Savitri Devi and the Hitler Avatar by Nicholas Goodrich Clark, Part 2. In Hindu chronology, the Kali Yuga suddenly and momentously gives way at its lowest point of degradation, suffering and evil to the opening of a new Satya or Krita Yuga, which begins the cycle anew. According to Savitri Devi, men against time play a crucial role in the struggle to restore the Golden Age as the Kali Yuga nears the completion of its term. Although possessed of the sun-like qualities and mystical ideals of the man above time, the man against time employs the practical means, the ruthlessness and violence of the man in time for the achievement of collective salvation and the regeneration of the world. In her scheme of things, men against time combine the qualities of lightning and sun as the real heroes of history, the builders and defenders of all new churches who devote their whole life and energy to the reshaping of tangible reality on the model of their vision of truth. These divinely inspired militant mystics are rare individuals who suddenly intervene in the downsweep of time with a promise of redemption and the return of the Golden Age. The revolutionary implications of the man against time are obvious. Like a fiery comet from the heavens, he bursts through the gloomy pall surrounding the earth in the Kali Yuga to herald the spreading sunshine of a new order of perfection, divine justice and righteousness. In Savitri Devi's opinion, the greatest man against time in all recorded history was Adolf Hitler, the Führer of the Germans and the divinely appointed leader of the Aryan world in the West. His demand for German national unity in a strong new Reich, in defiance of the humiliating Versailles Treaty, clearly identified him as a champion of the old tribal principle against the degenerate capitalist and cosmopolitan world of the Allies. His adoption of racist ideas, his anti-Semitism, and the Nuremberg race laws forbidding intermarriage and sexual relations between Aryans and Jews convinced Savitri Devi that he intended the revival of the Aryan caste system on a global basis. An avid believer in Hitler's propaganda image, she saw his love of children and animals, his domestic modesty, vegetarianism and abstention from alcohol as typical traits of the kindly ascetic. His ruthless use of military violence against his enemies in a resistant, fallen world, no less his uncompromising plan to exterminate the Jews, the age-old adversary and counter-image of the heroic Aryans, identified him as the essential man against time. Savitri Devi's notion of the man against time is derived from the Hindu idea of the periodic descent of the deity, typically Vishnu, in a human, superhuman, or animal form. This mediator between God and man is known as the avatar, or divine incarnation, and represents a development from the extra-human gods of the Vedic period. The origin of the concept of avatar is obscure, and precursors have been traced to Aryan Iran in the Bahram Yasht, a Zoroastrian text which may even show traces of Chinese influence and mythology. However, in none of these beliefs does the concept play such an important part as it does in the post-Vedic Hindu thought of the epics and the Bhagavad Gita. Both the Ramayana and the Mahabharata describe the descent of avatar in the form of Rama and Krishna, who both reappear as the favourite incarnations of Vishnu in the Puranas, ancient legends forming a further part of popular Hindu scripture. In the Mahabharata, Vishnu incarnates 10 times successively as a swan, fish, tortoise, boar, man-lion, and dwarf, Rama twice, Krishna, and Kalki. The Bhagavad Gita, which is a section of the Mahabharata, tells how Krishna posing as a charioteer, manifested as an avatar to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra during the war of the Kauravas and the Pandavas in 3102 BC. Krishna's advice to the warrior prince concerning his martial duties and divine wisdom comprise the full text of the Bhagavad Gita. Puranic avatars also catalyze the cycle of ages as the Yuga avatars. In the Treta Yuga, Vishnu appears as Rama and as Krishna at the end of the Dvapara Yuga and the beginning of the Kali Yuga. The Kalki avatar appears as the tenth and final incarnation of Vishnu. He arrives in the form of a sword-bearing rider on a white horse to end the Dark Age and initiate a new golden Satya Yuga. Savitri Devi is unquestionably the first Western writer to identify Adolf Hitler as an avatar. In a manner suggestive of bhakti devotion, she frequently quotes Krishna's verses from the theistic Bhagavad Gita with reference to Hitler. One particular couplet appears as the motto of her book Pilgrimage and elsewhere in its pages. Quote, "When justice is crushed, when evil is triumphant, then I come back for the protection of the good, for the destruction of evildoers, for the establishment of the reign of righteousness. I am born again and again, age after age." Close quote. Her eulogy of Hitler's life and political career in The Lightning and Sun begins with the incarnation of the divine collective self of Aryan mankind as the late-born child of light in Braunau am Inn in 1889. A description of the youth and his dawning sense of mission is based on August Kubizek's account of their adolescent friendship in Linz and Vienna during the years 1904 to 1908. Whether enthusing over the magical power of Wagner's music or boldly outlining plans for new cities, buildings and monuments, Hitler is for her the true friend of his people, ever inspired by the inner vision of a healthy, beautiful and peaceful world, a real earthly paradise reflecting cosmic perfection. Savitri Devi was sure that Hitler had realised he was an avatar while still a youth. She found compelling proof of this in Kubizek's account of young Adolf's dramatic reaction to a performance of Wagner's Rienzi they had seen together during November 1206 in Linz. Both boys were caught up in the great epic of Rienzi's rise to become the tribune of the people of Rome and his subsequent downfall. When the performance ended, it was past midnight. Hitler, usually very talkative after an exciting opera, was silent and withdrawn. He led his friend through the cold, foggy streets, up the Freinberg Hill on the western side of the town. Kubizek recalled how Hitler strode on, looking pale and sinister, until they reached the summit. They were no longer engulfed by the fog, and the stars shone brilliantly overhead. Then Hitler began to speak, his words bursting forth with hoarse passion. Kubizek was utterly amazed. Hitherto, he had always understood that Hitler wanted to become an artist, a painter, or an architect. None of that mattered now. It was as if another self spoke through him in a state of ecstasy or complete trance. Quote, "In sublime, irresistible images, he unfolded before me his own future and that of our people. He now spoke of a mandate that he was one day to receive from our people in order to leave them out of slavery to the heights of freedom." Close quote. With perfect recall of this starry hour in a conversation with Winifred Wagner and Kubizek at Bayreuth in 1939, Hitler solemnly added, "In that hour, it began." Savitri Devi believed that Adolf Hitler was the Western Aryan counterpart of Rama and Krishna among the Eastern Aryans of India. She visited Linz and Leonding on her pilgrimage of 1953 in the self-same spirit that had drawn her in the 1930s to Ayodhya where Rama, the miraculous conqueror of southern India, had lived and ruled, and to Brindaban, where Krishna, the immortal teacher of the doctrine of detached violence, had spent his early youth. Both these avatars personified to her the warlike wisdom and the territorial expansion of the hallowed race, and each of them inaugurated a new epoch in the history of the awakening of Aryan consciousness in antiquity. Just as Rama and Krishna were Yuga avatars, so she could invoke Hitler, the race saviour, as the perennial avatar of the Bhagavad Gita. Sitting in the garden of Hitler's former classmates in Leonding, she visualised the beloved features of her Führer, suddenly merging into the impersonal essence of the many-featured one who spoke Krishna's words to Arjuna. She was certain that she had sought him for centuries, in life after life, until she realised that the founder of the Third Reich was indeed he, the one who comes back, whenever he should, to establish the reign of righteousness. Savitri Devi believed that it was impossible to understand National Socialism apart from the cyclic conception of history suggested by Hindu tradition. She considered that Hitler's vision ultimately transcended even Germany and the Aryan race. The Nazi philosophy set at naught man's intellectual conceit, his naive pride in progress, and his futile attempts to enslave nature, and instead made the mysterious and unfailing impersonal wisdom of forests, oceans, and outer space the basis of a global regeneration policy for an overcrowded, over-civilized, and technically overdeveloped world at the end of the Kali Yuga. She saw Hitler embodying that eternal nature wisdom against the false science, false religion, false morality, and false political ideas of a decadent age. He made Germany's struggle for freedom, healthy living conditions, and power part of a broader struggle for the liberation of mankind from the Kali Yuga. He made Germany the holy land of the West, the stronghold of regenerate Aryandom. Savitri Devi also found the faithful echo of ancient Sanskrit wisdom in the institutions and organisations of the Third Reich. Her enthusiastic description of social life in Nazi Germany dwelt on the high moral tone, new housing and sports and leisure facilities in a sunlit world of energetic purpose. Hitler's measures for the physical and moral protection of his predestined people were intended to foster the natural leaders of the Aryan race. His new laws for the welfare of mother and child, for the creation of ideal living conditions for workmen's families, and for the education of a healthy, self-confident and self-reliant, proud and beautiful youth, and his Nuremberg race laws all promoted the regeneration of the pure-blooded Germanic race and arrested the threatening tide of inferior humanity, whose rise is always the index of an advanced stage of the Kali Yuga. But Savitri Devi neither ignored nor denied the dark side of Nazism. For her, the SS was the supreme Nazi organisation, the physical and moral elite of awakening Aryandom, the living matrix in which a new race of gods on earth was to take shape and soul. She dwelt lovingly on the harsh rigours of its discipline and on its high standards of cleanliness, presentation and drill. Purity of blood and flawless physical perfection were the conditions for admission to the SS. Prospective members were obliged to submit a family tree of exclusive Aryan Germanic descent back to 1750, and superiors took great care in vetting the future spouse of each SS man. Savitri Devi recalled that SS men always gave their religion as Gottglaubig, believer in God, rather than any denomination. This had nothing to do with Judeo-Christian notions of universalism, but embraced the idea of a natural and biological hierarchy in which the SS would form a blood aristocracy to rule over the rest of mankind. The SS knew nothing of meekness and humanity. Its watchwords were strictness and pride. The black uniforms, an ominous death's head insignia, symbolized the harsh forces in time, employed for the achievement of a golden age. Savitri Devi regarded the SS attitude towards war as a living expression of that ancient Aryan wisdom of detached violence necessary to overcome the Dark Age. Rigorous selection and training guaranteed the SS man's complete self-mastery and military skill. However, National Socialism was pitted against all the forces of darkness and decay in a fallen world, and this great cosmic battle required terrible deeds on the part of its elite military vanguard. Savitri Devi saw the SS as a living enactment of the ancient Aryan warrior code described in the Bhagavad Gita. Perform without attachment that action which is duty, desiring nothing but the welfare of creation. And again, taking as equal pleasure and pain, gain and loss, victory and defeat, gird thyself for battle. In her millenarian expectation of the end of the Kali Yuga, Savitri Devi combined the Hindu cyclic theory of time with more Manichaean and dualistic notions of Judeo-Christian apocalyptic prophecy. Savitri Devi saw the Jews as the embodiment of the Kali Yuga. Her broad surveys of ancient history often touched on the rise of the Semites. Initially, in the overthrow of the Mitanni by the Assyrians and the migration of the Hebrews into Palestine during Akhenaten's reign, while the Aryans were refining the caste system in India and their Western cousins were first settling as Teutons and Mycenaean Greeks in Europe, the Jews, she believed, were elaborating a cunning strategy for world domination. Strictly adhering to their own tribal identity, the Jews encouraged race mixing, cosmopolitanism, liberalism, and skepticism among all other peoples to promote their disintegration and downfall. Scattered by the Romans in the 1st century AD, the Jews entered Europe in the early Middle Ages and became in due course the ferment of its nations. During the modern period, the atomistic, self-seeking individualism of money capitalism served their purposes as much as Marxism, another Jewish doctrine intended for Gentile consumption, which cynically preached international raceless brotherhood. Savitri Devi presents a metaphysical anti-Semitism, according to which the Jew is the expression of the downsweep of the time cycle, and whose purpose is the dissolution of all races, all nations, all communities, and ultimately all life on this planet. From the 4th century BC onwards, until the time of Philo, she argued, Hellenized Jews had begun blending their Kabbalistic notions with Greek ideas to create that religion of man opposed to all other living creatures. This exaltation of man over nature led, either through capitalism or communism, to a general bastardization of the whole human species and its exponential proliferation as producers and consumers at the expense of all other creatures in a reign of quantity characterized by money, rational calculation, and the growth of human numbers. However, such philosophical falsehood was matched by its ecological folly. Mankind would simply create one vast international slum in which he completed the exhaustion and destruction of nature itself. In her account, the Jews are thus the epitome of the death forces in the era of gloom. Certain passages in Hitler's Mein Kampf do indeed possess a strange cosmic quality, especially when writing of the Jews or Marxism as the enemies of the Aryan race. Hitler often raises Nazi ideology to the level of a principle of order in the universe. Terms like the planets, the world ether, destiny, millions of years, and all creation lend a cosmological note to his accounts of nature, the struggle for life, and the survival of the fittest. Hitler also identified the human conquest and transcendence of nature as a dangerous illusion of Jewish origin. Should the Jew, with the aid of Marxism, prevail over mankind and the laws of nature, Hitler prophesied that the planet will go its way, void of human beings, through ethereal space, as it did millions of years ago. By defending myself against the Jew, I am fighting for the work of the Lord. Shivichi Devi seized upon such passages as striking evidence of Hitler's divine mission to eradicate the man-centered faiths in the Judeo-Christian orbit of the modern Western world in favour of the doctrine in the interest of the universe. She regarded Hitler as an avatar like Rama and Krishna, the most widely remembered Aryan heroes of ancient India, who also knew that the end of the Kali Yuga can be achieved only by responding to the decay of the Dark Age with yet greater violence. Shivichi Devi glorified Hitler for his atavaric intervention against the forces of death and disintegration in a battle for the future of the universe. At the mass meetings and rallies of the 20s and the 30s, he spoke with a wild eloquence of emergency, knowing that the struggle he was about to start had to take place, then or never. He knew that his German people and the whole Aryan race were threatened in their existence by the agents of the death powers, cornered, and that their definitive downfall and disappearance would mean the definitive downfall of higher organized life upon this planet, with no hope of resurrection. She extolled the mystical insight, elemental logic, and violence of Nazism as a collective expression of Hitler's own iron will, militant brutality, and fanatical faith. The Yuga avatar was a harbinger of the apocalypse and the onset of the next age. The Hindu mythology of the Puranas foretold the advent of Kalki, the tenth and final avatar of Vishnu, as the divine incarnation who will end the Kali Yuga and initiate a new Krita Yuga. When the close of the Kali Age shall be nigh, a portion of that divine being, who exists of his own spiritual nature in the character of Brahma, and who is the beginning and the end, and who comprehends all things, shall descend upon the earth. He will be born in the family of Vishnuyasas, an eminent Brahman of Shambhala village, as Kalki, endowed with the 8 superhuman faculties. He will destroy all whose minds are devoted to iniquity. He will then re-establish righteousness upon earth, and the minds of those who live at the end of the Kali Age shall be awakened, and shall be as pellucid as crystal. The men who are thus changed by virtue of that peculiar time shall be as the seeds of human beings, and shall give birth to a race who shall follow the laws of the Krita Age, or the Age of Purity. The critical and final nature of the Kalki avatar in the cycle of the ages has led to speculation that this is a borrowing from Christian apocalyptic prophecy concerning the second coming of Christ. This particular myth in the Vishnu Purana has been dated to the first couple of centuries AD, and scholars have wondered whether this idea entered India with the Parthian invasions in the same period. Kalki is always portrayed in Hindu iconography as a sword-bearing warrior mounted on a white horse, which would again suggest a link to the Redeemer figure or the warrior Christ in the Book of Revelation. This close parallel between Christian and Hindu ideas of the Saviour, in the first case as one who ends all history, in the second as one who restores perfection for the period of a new cycle, go some way to explaining the peculiar attraction of Kalki to the Western millenarian mind. Savitri Devi devoted the final part of The Lightning and the Sun to the coming of Kalki and the end of the Age of Gloom. Did Savitri Devi believe Adolf Hitler was Kalki? She almost certainly did during the heyday of the Third Reich and the first half of the Second World War, as Hitler's Atavarik battle escalated into a global conflict with the declaration of war against the Soviet Union, followed by the United States. She shuddered at his colossal challenge to the combined Dark Age forces of Jewry, Marxism, and international capitalism. However, by late 1944, even she and her husband could no longer have expected an Axis victory. It was clear that Hitler had not ended the Kali Yuga, but her hopes for its ending remained undimmed, and she also clung to the belief that Hitler was still alive, awaiting the right moment to resume hostilities against the world. It was only certain that Kalki would come, and Hitler might indeed reappear as Kalki at this final Armageddon. But even if Hitler himself did not return, Kalki would combine the qualities of the Krishna avatar on the Kurukshetra battlefield in the Bhagavad Gita with those of Adolf Hitler and of all men against time who come back to re-establish the reign of righteousness. In the meantime, she believed that Hitler had offered not only himself, but his beloved German people in sacrifice for the fulfillment of the highest purpose of creation, the survival of a superior mankind. Krishna's words appeared as the second motto of pilgrimage, quote, "I am the oblation, I am the sacrifice," close quote. In early 1956, when Germany was divided and National Socialism reviled, Savitri Devi fondly imagined that Hitler would survive in songs and symbols. Quote, "The lords of the new time cycle, men of his own blood and faith, will render him divine honours through rites full of meaning and full of potency in the cool shade of the endless regrown forests on the beaches or upon the inviolate mountain peaks facing the rising sun." Close quote. For Savitri Devi, the place of Adolf Hitler in the future Aryan pantheon was quite secure.